talk about here in our third session is about finishing well, leading to the end. And look, I think of myself, I'm not 60 years old yet, but I'm not far from it. So, you know, you just kind of think, okay, what is in this last, segment of my life? Hopefully not a short segment, although come quickly, Lord Jesus, wouldn't mind that at all. How's that going to look for me? But here, there's one thing I want you to understand, is thinking about finishing well and leading to the end, if you're 20 years old, you should start thinking about that right now. It's not something to think about in the last couple years of your life. I mean, naturally, we would think about it more as we see our end approaching, the end coming closer rather than further away. But really, the basics of being able to finish well begin earlier in life. I think of three examples. The three examples are in your notes. Caleb, Paul, and of course, the ultimate example of finishing well is Jesus. There's nobody who finished better than Jesus. Now, you think of Caleb, this figure in the Old Testament, one of the two faithful spies who came back with the report from the Promised Land. And even though there were 10 other spies who said, the people who inhabit the Promised Land are too mighty, too big. We can't go in there. We can't overcome them. It was Caleb and Joshua who collectively said, with God's power, we can overcome them. Let's go take the land. The people foolishly did not listen to the report of faith from Caleb and Joshua, but Caleb did what he should do in delivering that report. But not only was Caleb faithful in his younger years like that, he was faithful in his older years. He remembered all that God had done. He's the guy who went out and boldly took forth the promised land when God brought him into it 40 years after delivering that faithful report as one of the two faithful spies. Okay, now, we look at Caleb. He's a man who finished mightily to the end. I think of this in Joshua chapter 14, starting at verse 6. Then the children of Judah came to Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said to him, you know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. So Moses swore on that day, saying, surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God. Now, Caleb kept this high commitment to God that started in his early years, hot and burning to the end. He remembered all God's faithfulness and honestly, all he had done for the Lord. I don't know about you, but it strikes me a little bit as I read these words from Caleb. Does it strike you just as a little bit boastful? Yeah, do you remember that great thing I did for God when we were kids 40 years ago? And you know what? I don't think it is so boastful, especially if you're talking about 40 years prior. You're just remembering and rejoicing in the great things God does. Listen, I really believe that if we serve the Lord faithfully now, then in our closing years, we will have things to look back on and just rejoice in before the Lord. God wants to build those things in our life right now. I'm not speaking to very many young people, and I would say young people like, you know, junior high, senior high, that. But whenever I have the opportunity to speak to them, even into the young college age, I always like to tell them, give the young years of your life to serving God, and you won't regret it. It's really been the testimony of my life and my wife's life. We don't regret it. And whatever that looks like, of course, I'm not trying to imply for a moment that means full-time vocational ministry for every person. I'm not saying it's that. But in whatever it is that God gives you to do, find a way to serve and glorify him, and you won't regret it. That is Caleb right here. He remembered God's promises. He remembered what God did, and he had that all in his mind towards the end. But he was still looking for new challenges to the end. Brothers and sisters, I believe that there's nobody too old for God to use. Now, the way God uses you may change. Some of us don't have as much energy as we had in our younger years. We don't have as much mobility as we had in our younger years. We don't have as much mental clarity as we had in our younger years. But there's still ways that we can serve God. I tell you, the best testimony I ever heard of this was a man named Hudson Taylor. You ever hear of Hudson Taylor? Groundbreaking missionary to China. And this is what they say about Hudson Taylor. When he was old and infirmed, he was confined to a bed. He couldn't do what he had normally done for decades, and that spread out all over inland China and bring the gospel and plant churches and support missionaries and do all that work. He couldn't do that. He was confined to a bed. He was weak. He was ailing. So this is what he did. Is he set up a big map of China on the wall facing his bed, and as he was confined to that bed, he would just look at that map and pray for different people and places on that map, serving God and advancing his kingdom to the very end. I hear things like that, and I go, okay, we don't want to put away challenges. We don't want to stop serving God or bringing honor to him. No matter what condition we're in, we can find a way to. Caleb did that. I'll tell you, someone else who did that is the Apostle Paul. Let me read to you from 2 Timothy chapter 4 here, where Paul says this, starting in verse 6. These verses always get me when I read them. For I'm already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have kept the faith. Now, it's easier to end well when you've served well. Okay, look, nobody for a moment is saying serve perfectly. There is no doubt that Paul had regrets as he looked back on his ministry. And I want to remind you of something. What we see in Paul here at the close of his life, we look at it and we say, this is Paul the Apostle. This is one of the heroes of the faith. This is like as, who was it? J. Oswald Sanders, I think, called Paul the world's most successful Christian. I don't know if that's accurate, but I mean, this is Paul. We look at this and we go, amazing. I want you to understand, Paul died pretty much alone, pretty much wondering how those churches were doing that he established, and in the eyes of the world, a failure. That's how Paul died. Now, I think we have a true estimation of Paul. But what I'm saying is that true estimation of Paul wasn't heavy in the air. People weren't applauding him when he went to his death. They were cheering on the executioner. So Paul says all this. I'm already being poured out as a drink offering. The time of my departure is at hand. I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I've kept the faith. And then he says here in verse 8, finally there is a crown, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. By the way, aren't you glad he put that in there? Wouldn't we automatically assume that the crown was only for guys like Paul if he hadn't put that in? Okay, so this is what's on Paul's mind. Running the race, that's right there in verse 7. Receiving the crown, right there in verse 8. You know, when Olympic athletes today are successful, we put a medal around their neck. When Olympic athletes in Paul's day were successful, they put a crown on their head. And that's why he relates the idea between running the race and receiving the crown. But notice what he says there in verse 7 about running the race. I have finished the race, he says. I've kept the faith. Folks, God has a race for you to run in your Christian life, and I want to make it very clear, that's your race. He doesn't call you to run anybody else's race, but he calls you to run your race. Don't think that your life is successful or a failure because it matches or doesn't match what somebody else has done. Well, wouldn't it be terrible if, and look, I'm making this up. I'm not saying that this would actually happen, but to make something up. Wouldn't it be terrible if, end of your life, you appear before the Lord and say, Lord, I'm so pleased. Look, I finished the race. I did it just like so-and-so, and I did it. And God says to you, I never called you to run their race. I called you to run the race I had for you. But when you do, there's a crown laid up. Paul had in mind not only the fact that the race God wanted him to run, but he also had in mind very much the idea that there was a reward. You can finish well knowing there's a reward for what God has you. Now, this idea of finishing well, it's applicable to the end of life, but it's also applicable to wherever God has you, if God should move you on from it. I've been in Christian ministry since the early 80s. I became a pastor at age 19 in the year 1982. About a month before my 20th birthday. Now, since that time that I began in ministry, I've planted two churches, been the pastor of another church that I didn't plant. I succeeded another man in there. I was the director of an international Bible college in Germany for 7 years. And then for the last 4 years, I haven't been a pastor over a congregation, but I'm working with this ministry that I have of a Bible commentary and everything associated with that. So what is that? That's three pastorates, a Bible college, and whatever it is I do now, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. So this is kind of what I observe. I haven't been able to keep down a job anywhere in any one of these ministries. Now, I guess what I'm just saying is I've been deeply invested in four different ministries that I've left, that I've moved on from. And if I could say, thinking back on it, well, I never had this thought before right now. I think each time I've left it a little bit better each time. I've finished well. Boy, this isn't good English, but I hope you know what I mean. I finished well, better each time. That's terrible English, isn't it? We're not recording this, are we? Oh, my. And you know what? I think some of that is just being older and more mature in the Lord, each one of those steps. But hopefully it's God working in me each step of the way as well. And I think that the time for considering how you're going to finish well, it begins right now, no matter what you're doing. I'm going to speak in terms of church ministry right now, like being a pastor, even though I know that doesn't apply to many of us here, but just you can transfer the concept. Every pastor is an interim pastor. Unless you want the church to die with you. If you want the church to die with you, then okay, you're going to be the only pastor of that church. But if you are, by the grace of God, hoping to establish a work that will continue on beyond you, whether God moves you on, or whether he moves you on to something else on earth or something in heaven, then there's going to be somebody who succeeds you. What are you doing now to lay the groundwork for you finishing well and somebody else to do well behind you. Now, I'll tell you part of the point that you should do. It's simply this. It's that you need to pour into people now to do the things that you do. Now, again, this transfers to whatever you do, whatever place of leadership or authority that you have. You need to pour into other people to do the things that you are able to do. When leaders are insecure, this is very difficult for them because all they think they're doing is raising up competition. But we got to do the best we can to get that out of our mind and just say there's a kingdom purpose for us to pour into other people. I remember one time I heard a pastor say, he said that a pastor should be training others to do everything that he does. When the pastor said that, I thought, that can't be true. That's not right. Surely, there are some things that I do as a pastor that are so holy that nobody else should do them or be trained to do them. And I thought of it, I got to think of what some of those things are. What is it? And I thought, and I thought, and I thought. And this dear pastor, a man I really respect, who I heard say this, a man named Ricky Ryan, I thought, and I said, Ricky, you're absolutely right. Everything I do, I should be training somebody else. Now, in the business world, they say train your replacement, pour into your replacement. But you just don't think of it as one person. We need to be people who are constantly pushing ministry and leadership down to others and training them, giving them opportunities. Now, that is key in finishing well. Caleb inspired a whole generation of other men like him. Paul the Apostle? Are you kidding me? Think of all that he did to pour into people, the disciples that he raised up after him to carry on the work. But the greatest example, of course, is Jesus. Let me read you a couple verses that speak of Jesus finishing well. John chapter 13, verse 1. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he should depart from this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. When I hear that, it really speaks to my heart. It convicts me. David, if you want to finish well, you need to love to the end. You know, for me, I find it much easier to love for a season than to love to the end. But you can see Jesus right here at the Last Supper. And of course, we could talk literally for hours what Jesus did after this in John chapter 13. But I just want you to get that picture there. Jesus, very deliberately coming to the end of his earthly ministry, says, I need to love to the end. That's something to pray for. Lord, however long you have me in my present position, as my present place, I want to love to the end. Can I just say? I think this is an important prayer for parents to pray. I don't mean to imply for a moment that parenting ends when the kids are grown up and move out of the house. But it certainly changes. It's not the same. Matter of fact, you can make the argument that parenting changes, has different phases all through. I mean, to be a parent of a little newborn infant is different than being the parent of a 12-year-old. So there's a development of that. Parents, isn't it possible? Theoretically. Not that it would happen to anybody in this room. But isn't it possible that in the difficulties we sometimes face with our children as they grow older, that our love for them can grow a bit cold? It's possible. That's a prayer for parents to pray. Lord, keep my love for this child strong to the end. I want to finish well. And of course, I'm not talking about finishing parenting with them, because you're going to be their parent their entire life. But what I'm talking about is finishing that phase of parenting while they're still in your home. But then here's another aspect of Jesus finishing well. John chapter 19, verse 30. So when Jesus had received sour wine, he said, "It is finished." And bowing his head, he gave up his spirit. There's two things here that I think are so amazing. I'm sure Pastor Eric has preached some impressive sermons on that. It is finished, tetelestai. That's great stuff, isn't it? Isn't that great preaching material there, Eric? It really is. The word Jesus spoke there, we use it as a phrase, it is finished. It's one word in the original language of the New Testament. And I'm not a Greek scholar by any means, but I know how to read the people who are. And that word, it is finished, it's one word, tetelestai. Again, I wouldn't be surprised if you've heard some good sermons on this before, because it's a great point to bring out. And it means finished, paid in full, completed. And isn't that a powerful thing for Jesus at the very end to say, it's done, it's finished. He had a sense of completion. And that's exactly what we want to be able to say. Now, Paul said something very much similar, didn't he? I finished the race. Lord, help me right now to build towards whether I'm going to end with a phase of what I'm doing before you here, or whether I'm going to end with the entirety of what I do for you here on this earth. Help me to end in a way where I can say it's finished. What you gave me to do, I've done. Twice in his letters, Paul tells people, I think once, I'm trying to remember this, he says it to Timothy, and once he says it to Epaphras, he says this word. No, maybe it was Onesimus. No. Anyway, I'll get off on a weird rabbit trail. He uses this phrase, fulfill your ministry. That's what every one of us wants to be able to be. Lord, I've fulfilled it. Not perfectly, of course. I trust your grace has covered over many errors and failings. But in the whole, what you gave me to do, what you gave me to do, not anybody else, I finished it. So there's that aspect. Then it says there in John, did you notice? And bowing his head, he gave up his spirit. That phrase, bowing his head, is used a few other places in the New Testament of laying your head down to sleep. It speaks of rest. And there's going to come that time when we rest from our labors. We rest from what we completed in a phase of our life. We rest what we completed with our entire life. And we want to be able to finish well without. But again, the main principle I'm trying to get to you across here is we finish well by giving attention to what we're doing right here, right now. All right, now, in the few minutes I have before we start our question and answer, let me give you some very practical steps to be able to finish well. I'm going to give you five of them. Number one, continue learning. Don't ever stop learning. We need to stay teachable, stay learning to the end. And I'm not trying to deny that God hasn't given you a lot of wisdom along the way. But there's none of us that knows everything. There's none of us that can't learn from somebody else. So determine, I'm going to keep learning. That'll help you finish well. Number two, stay others-centered. This is a danger for everybody, but if I could say it's a particular danger for us who have served the Lord for a while and we kind of think that we kind of know it all and we've seen it all and we just can kind of isolate and retreat back into ourselves. No, through it all, we want to stay others-centered. There's a great story about Charles Spurgeon. He was old. Well, I shouldn't say he was old for him. Spurgeon died in his 50s. He was infirmed in his life. He suffered a lot of illnesses. And frankly, he didn't take that great care of himself. But in his older years, when he couldn't walk very well, there he is walking the streets of London, and he comes up to a corner, and he has to cross the street, and the traffic is moving every which way. And he looks at me and he goes, I can't do it. I can't cross the street. I'll get killed if I cross the street. And his courage is faltering. He says, I can't do it. Right then, he feels a tap on his shoulder. He turns around. It's a guy with a white cane. It's a blind guy. And he says, sir, can you help me across the street? Spurgeon says, okay, let's go. Okay, what he wouldn't have done just for himself, you brought somebody else into the equation that he could serve and help, said, okay, let's go, let's do it. By the way, he crossed the street. He didn't die in a street in London. So keeping others centered, I think, is very important to finishing well. Number three, you need to stay on track. In other words, don't turn into distractions. Keep your focus. It's very easy to do to let things get scattered as time goes on. Look, especially if you're a gifted person, there's a lot of things you can do. But there's a few things that you're really going to excel at. One of the best illustrations ever, I mean, really, this principle really had a profound significance on my own life and ministry. A guy used the illustration of Michael Jordan, of course, the great basketball player. And he asked this question. He said, was Michael Jordan a good baseball player? Because, you know, Michael Jordan took, what was it, 1 year, 2 years, 2 years off of his career to go play Major League Baseball. And I don't think he ever made it to the major leagues, but he got up to AAA, and he played AAA baseball for the Chicago White Sox, and then he went back to his basketball career. And the guy asked, he said, was Michael Jordan a good baseball player? Now, we all answered, no way, he was no good. He goes, what are you talking about? How many people who play baseball in the United States ever make it to AAA? What are you talking about, the top 2%? If you're in the top 2% of everybody who plays baseball in the United States, don't tell me you're a bad baseball player. You're a good baseball player. Because yet, nobody thinks that Michael Jordan was smart for taking 2 years off his career to go play baseball. Why? Because even though you could say he was in the top 2% of all the baseball players in the country, I don't want to get in a basketball argument, but in his day, he was the best basketball player on the earth. All right, I'll debate that. But anyway. I'd make the case for Magic Johnson if we had time, but again. I think Magic Johnson made the people around him better to a degree that, anyway, that's a different argument. All right, it's a controversial opinion. No disrespect. All right, but we're really getting off field here. But you see what I'm talking about? To leave something that you are absolutely world class at, to do something that you're good at, can be a big mistake. So you need to keep focused even to the end. And then I'll conclude with this. What you want to do is you want to very deliberately make it better for those who are going to follow you. Now, people who are at the end of their life are very conscious about, they want to draw up a will, they want to that. I want to make it better for the people. I want to do the best I can with that. But no matter what phase you're at in your life, you think, what can I do now to build up something that will make it better for the people who follow me? Now, in the notes that you have, either printed out or digitally, you'll find other great resources there. I like the list of 5 characteristics of leaders who finish well. There's other things to think about and consider and all that. But really, I think it comes down to this. If you want to finish well, either in a particular phase of what you're doing or in the entirety of life, that begins right now. Many people who think about their retirement, they reach about 55 and they say, you know, I should start saving for my retirement. How does that usually work out? often not too well, does it? The time to start building that legacy for the end, if you're intentional about it when you're young, it's much easier. Now, what do you do if you are 55 and never save for retirement? Well, do the best you can right now. There's nothing you can do about the past. We still haven't invented the time machine. So you can't go back in the past and change anything. But you can say, okay, well, right now is the day I can begin to build towards that.